Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy.
Here we are again, Sean. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? This is becoming a regular thing, Phil. People are going to start talking, you know.
I know. It's shocking, isn't it? Look, we're still on slightly odd days. We're not quite every other Monday at the moment as we were last season. But we're still getting back into the swing of it. The snook season has sort of just restarted. Where are you?
We will get back to some level of consistency, won't we? We absolutely promise it. We will. I'm back in Dublin.
Okay.
Just about tentatively thinking about getting the queue out to start doing a bit of pre-season.
Well, you've been doing some exhibitions, haven't you? You've been travelling the length and breadth, doing a few.
I've been busy. Yeah, I've been taking my show, which is for those that don't know, is based on snooker, magic, and music. In Ireland, I work with Angus McAnally. We've been doing that show across Ireland, and then I've been doing it across the UK. Despite wanting to have a bit of time off, I've actually been quite busy on the quiet. Been all over the UK and Ireland, as you say. Whilst I haven't done any actual practice yet, do you know what? On the quiet, I've been hitting the ball really nicely.
Nice.
So, looking forward to getting stuck in. I don't start Championship League. I think until July the 12th. So, you know, that's still just over 2 weeks away as we record. The Championship League goes on for about 5 months, I think, something like that.
If you're Matt Selt, about 3.5 years.
Yeah. Yeah. There was like a wage to Matt last season, wasn't it?
It was
like he had to declare it on his tax return.
I would hope so.
As wages. No, in all seriousness. No, I'm looking forward to getting stuck into Championship League. Actually seriously considering taking a short-term let on an apartment in Leicester for the coming season, because Leicester's going to become like the home of the snooker world, really, on the quiet, isn't it? You look down the calendar and so many events in Leicester for the coming season. It's remarkable.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? It's absolutely crazy. But that's good. So you've been busy though, which is good to hear. And you started one of your exhibitions with a 140?
I've had a really number of good breaks, and despite not really practicing as such since the World Championships, yeah, the form's good. And obviously, there's completely no pressure in these shows and stuff. But it is great to play well. It's great to, you know, put a show on for the, everyone that pays their money and buys a ticket and comes and watches you play. And I suppose from that point of view, exhibitions and shows are a different type of pressure because you're there to make sure you put on a show. Thankfully, all the little magic tricks that I've done have gone well. A few of the venues have hired in pianos for me to play at the end of the night with their VIPs and stuff. And it would be wrong to say that I've not hit any wrong notes. That would be absolutely wrong to say. But a very large percentage of the notes were correct. I won't make the joke about playing all the right notes, but not necessarily in the right order. That would be obvious, and I wouldn't go there. But yeah, it's been great. I've enjoyed it. And I've also enjoyed following you around on Instagram, Phil. You've been all over the place as well, haven't you? What have you been up to?
I've been a busy boy, yeah. I've been all over the place. I had, I've been doing a lot of stuff in the automotive industry again, all over the place doing that. In fact, I've not been home for about a week. In fact, it's a week since I was last at home. I've managed to smash my knee up, tripping up on a curb in Belfast. That wasn't the wisest thing to do. But yeah,
Hang on. Was there alcohol involved?
Do you know what? This is the most annoying thing. I was actually on my way to get a beer. I was going out in the sunshine to get myself a pint somewhere in a beer garden, and I tripped up on a curb and smashed my left knee to bits, which is not very good, so it hurts a lot. But yeah, I had a boxing show up in Rotherham, and then at the weekend, I went over to Denmark once again.
Sorry, I'm going to have to just qualify, because I lived in Rotherham for 3 years. I just have to qualify. When you say boxing show in Rotherham, was this an official boxing show, or was this just like a Thursday night?
No, it was an official one. It was at Magna in Rotherham. It was. Right. Do you know what? It was actually a really good show as well. But then I went over to Denmark at the weekend, and again, because I seem to like it over there, it's great. And there is a video knocking around of me dancing around a boxing ring, getting 2,000 Danes to sing Sweet Caroline, which was good.
I've seen it.
Any boxing fans that listen to the podcast, keep an eye out for a young man called Jakob Bank, who is about 21, 22 years old, won the WBO European Super Middleweight title at the weekend. He could well go on to very, very big things. I've mentioned him before, actually. But any boxing fans, Jakob Bank from Denmark. Yeah, very, very impressive. And a nice lad as well, actually. 21, 22. Became a dad about 2 weeks ago, right before a massive fight for him. And yeah, he still managed to pull it out of the bag. So fantastic stuff. Now, in the last 2 weeks, we mentioned on the last podcast our friend Rob Walker and the crazy challenges putting himself through, going from John O'Groats to Land's End. And he's done it, Sean.
Absolutely incredible. And WST have made a really nice little YouTube video on their channel. Anyone wanting to watch it, head over to WST's YouTube channel, and it's on there. And it's a little 10-12 minute video about the tour, about Rob's absent friend's run and the trip that he did from one end of Great Britain to the other. And it is absolutely incredible. I actually watched it last night and I was crying my eyes out watching it at the end. What that man has done there and the effort he's put into just making sure that, you know, the absent friend's tour, he's obviously doing it for three of his best friends and then his son's friend who passed away. He lost four people very close to him in quick succession to raise money for the Jesse May Trust as well. Incredible. And to do it with typical Rob Walker grace and passion and positivity. I rang him a couple of times. I kept in touch with him on the odd day here or there. I desperately wanted to meet him, but I couldn't make it work. Just absolutely blown away by what he's done. And I have to say, and I said this to him, and without going too deep, you know, we like to keep things as light as possible on the pod. I know we do, but I said to Rob, the thing that he's done here by talking about grief, talking about what we all go through when we lose somebody, has really helped me remember and address perhaps some of the issues I'd had around people who I've lost through my life. And of course, I've made a big thing about it. Everyone knows that my best mate a couple of years ago now, Brandon Parker, passed away. And other members of my family, and my uncle Frank died around the same sort of time. I was so close to him. And dealing with grief, dealing with grief's difficult.
It's it. Do you know, as part of his tour, there was an interview or a chat he had with Radzi in, I think, a caravan park somewhere, actually, a bit random. With Radzi, the presenter from Eurosport. And just check that one out if you haven't done, because they both sort of really opened up, and it was quite lovely, actually, to hear such honesty. And I know that was one of the reasons why Rob's done it, in tribute to these friends of his and his sons. He's also done it to raise an awful lot of money for two fantastic charities. And, you know, I donated, I hope lots of other people have as well, because he deserves it with what he's done. And we've got to mention Sam. Sam Fletcher from World Snooker Tour, we mentioned him on the last podcast. He did the entire thing with Rob. He wasn't cycling and running, I don't think, he's in a car. But spending that amount of time with Rob Walker while Rob Walker's on a high. Oh, Sam Fletcher, this one's for you. Absolutely Herculean effort from Sam, because, as I said in the last podcast, his ears must be battered, Sean.
I've been really lucky to get to know Rob and all these guys and girls over the years. I first met Rob in Telford at the UK Championships around 2007-08. Might have been the year I won the championship in Telford, where, of course, snooker is returning to this season for the first time in many, many years. And I just remember being blown away by his positivity and just the way he is absolutely glass half full all the time. And I remember I was going through a bit of a rough period in my life, and I was just so inspired by him. Yeah. And I've got to know him as we've shared the commentary booth together in the last few seasons, as I've embarked on a broadcasting career. I watch with awe as he does his job so professionally. And of course, no one is better placed than yourself to understand just how difficult that is to be MC. You know, you're exactly the same. You never stumble a word. You get everything correct first time, every time. You know, you guys are head and shoulders above everyone else. And it's just so good to watch. And I've learned so much. He's just a wonderful, wonderful human being.
Yeah, he really is.
So when he crossed the line on the little video, I don't want to, spoiler alert, but I don't want to ruin it for anyone. But when he crosses the line, and he does, obviously, the emotion does flow out of him. He looked and he just says, this was for you, you know, this was for the guys that he's lost. And that broke me, I have to say, that broke me.
Yeah, he's a man that I look up to, both in stature and in as a human as well. He's a big guy, he's a good guy. I always describe him as one of life's true crackpots, and I mean that in an absolutely wonderful way. That's not a negative thing to say at all. He is, and he's a wonderful crackpot. Yeah, fair play to him. Well done, Rob. That is tremendous what you've done there. Right, this is a listener question special. We've had loads and loads of listener questions in over the last few months. We've been answering a few as the podcast have gone along, but we're going to do loads of them on this. With there not being any snooker the last few weeks, it's all been a little bit quiet, so there's not that much snooker-wise for us to talk about. So we're going to answer early questions. However, we must mention Championship League has started. It started this week. It's a weird way to start the season, isn't it, Championship League? Because it's all a bit quiet. It doesn't really start with a bang, does it?
Yeah, no, do you know, I was thinking this earlier on, and, you know, you compare it to maybe like the football, the Premier League, or whatever you might want, you know, and it's big, isn't it? You know, you know when the season starts. But listen, these things are very, very complicated. Obviously, we'd all much rather there be a much bigger, grander season opening situation. But you're dealing with broadcast dates and venue dates. And, you know, it isn't a straightforward equation that I think, you know, most people think it is. A lot easier than it is. It isn't. Otherwise, they'd be doing it. I'm really looking forward to getting stuck into this season, I have to say, buoyed by, you know, my own turn in form at the end of last season. Yes, you know, I didn't finish the season off as I wanted to, losing in the first round of the World Championships. But I think I showed enough in all of the events, except the ones where I ran into superheroes, your Jack Lazowski's and your Scott Donaldson's and your Stuart Bingham's. The Welsh Open, I thought I played really well, and obviously the players and the tour champs spoke for themselves. I'm really excited and optimistic for the forthcoming season. I noticed that WST did a piece there with three pundits predicting who they thought were going to be the players of the season and performances of the season and stuff like that. And I was very, very pleased to see none of them mentioned me. And if I needed it, that just gives me that little tiny little bit extra motivation because, you know, I've had that bad a few seasons in recent years that no one's talking about what I may or may not do. And I've got a sneaky feeling that you haven't seen the last of Sean Murphy just yet.
Well, I'm pretty sure we haven't. A few people have asked me what I'm doing in the new season. Don't know yet. It's all still to be decided, I believe. So still waiting to hear. Hopefully it'll be the same as last year. That'll be grand. But we shall see. But I'm, like you said, I'm going to be busy anyway, so it's all good. Right. Now, we had a few complaints. There was no rant in the last episode. We had one person very happy there wasn't a rant, but unlucky. Sean, do you have a rant for me today?
Oh, I do. And it's a live rant because it happened to me today.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, let's go for it then. Let's go for it straight off, shall we? Sean Murphy, the magician, the David Blaine of the Bays. You have 1 minute and 47 seconds from when I say rant to the sound of the klaxon to make your rant. Sean Murphy, are you ready?
I am ready.
3, 2, 1, rant.
Now, what you've got to remember about this rant is that it's linked to the fact we've just been through a global pandemic, which is linked to hygiene and dirt and germs. Picture the scene. You waltz into the supermarket and you've got to buy quite a little, you know, you've got to buy quite a lot. It's too much for a basket, which are free. You go up to the trolleys and you can't take a trolley because you need a pound coin, or in my case here living in Ireland, a euro coin. Because apparently these trolleys are like the most wanted things that people steal all the time. I mean, who is stealing these trolleys? Why do I need a euro or a pound coin to borrow a trolley to waltz round Tesco's? What is going on? It's 2023. I've got everything on my phone, and I'm not trying to become a member of the Royal. I don't carry cash. I certainly don't carry coins. Who carries coins these days? Does anyone carry coins? Anybody? Apart from that fella who pretends to be Santa at a train station at, you know, at Christmas, and he's rattling his coins, asking, you know, who actually carries coins these days? Nobody. Unless you're doing a car boot sale and you have to take change, no one actually carries change these days. It's ridiculous to be expected in 2023 to pull out a grimy, dirty, filthy, virus germ-ridden coin that's probably been in places we don't want to talk about and stick it in a trolley so you can borrow it to walk around the shops. It's ridiculous. It's filthy. Absolutely filthy.
Okay, the klaxon's gone. You can breathe now, Sean. Now, I've got to ask, where do you think people are putting coins?
Well,
you slightly concern me there. Right, now, just a second. I'm going to play devil's advocate and come down the side of the supermarket here. Do you know what a trolley costs?
Do you carry change with you?
Yeah, I do. Sorry, I'm a cash man. I'm a big fan of cash.
I like cash, but the paper kind.
Do you know what a trolley costs? Seriously?
No, of course I don't. Right. Who actually knows the answer to that?
A trolley costs around about £200. So,
Of course it does.
What do you think it costs? Think about it. Look at a trolley. Look at a supermarket trolley.
A supermarket... Now listen. I've had to back down from the odd comment I've made on this podcast. I've had to defend myself from comments, and I have in the past been known to make sweeping comments, Philip. But that one might come back. A supermarket trolley costs £200. Are you absolutely certain?
A lot of them go missing. A lot of them end up in canals and rivers and all that kind of thing.
To quote Lee Evans from years ago, then they let Malcolm, the trolley captain, direct them around the car parks of supermarkets. I don't think so. He's driving 50 trolleys at once. Well, no chance.
I think
you might have lost in the off season. I think you might have lost a step there, young Philip.
In the United States, supermarket trolleys cost anywhere from $75 to $400.
Welcome to the 147 podcast. The snooker podcast that's not a snooker. This is the information that people want.
210-litre snooker trolley, shopping snooker trolley truck. Even. Shopping trolley, £184.25. So my £200 was not actually that far away from the reality. So to be able to borrow one for a pound, which, by the way, you get back, I don't actually think it's bad value. If it stops ending up in rivers and canals, then it's got to be a good thing.
It's about the fact, it's about I don't carry coins. I just don't do it.
Sean, do you know what? I'm going to get you on those key rings with the little token that you can take off to use as a supermarket shopping trolley. Yeah,
do you know, I did see a little hack that apparently, like, the back of a Yale key that's like a circular edge to the back of it. Apparently that fits in as well.
I just carry a quid, man. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. Do you know what happened? I used to always carry change in the car for situations just like this. And I left my car at Brandon's house millions of years ago, about 10 years ago. I left the car at his house to go on a trip of China. I was away for 3 weeks. And when I came back, he said, yeah, no, I've cleaned your car and washed it all out. And I've changed all that coinage in your car into pound notes. And there was about £20 in coins in the well of the handle of the car door. And there was a £20 note sat there. He thought he was helping me out. He'd ruined my life.
So there you go. That's the rant. I think he's absolutely way off the mark. What do other normal people think?
I know there are people listening to this who walk into a supermarket and they're anxious. If they can't fit their shopping into a basket, they reach in for the empty pocket. They know they haven't got coins. And they are faced with the trolley of doom. Then you've got to look for an ATM to find an ATM to pull out money you don't need, to go to the cashier to break it, to get a pound coin you shouldn't have to need, to get a trolley you don't really want.
So there you go. Queen Sean doesn't carry any cash. Who's the same? Who agrees with him? Who agrees with me that it's just a pound? Just put the pound in, you get it back anyway. At 147pod across all forms of social media. What do you think? Is he out of order? Is Queen Sean out of order with not carrying cash? Or could he just carry a pound? And let's face it, he could just get one of those key rings like my mum's got that's got one of the little tokens in that's the same shape and size as a pound and just use that. Anyway, I need a break after that. I don't know about you, Sean. I would hope you do anyway. We will be back after a very short moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod. Certainly is. So yeah, please get in touch, interact with us on social media. We love a bit of that. It's absolutely brilliant. Right, now we did say this is a listener's question special. We will be doing a season preview. Coming up very, very shortly. I listened back to last season's and it was quite interesting. We did tip up Luca Brasil. We also tipped up Shin Tong and Bing Tao. That didn't go well. Sean?
You think we should have done the season preview before the season started?
Yeah, don't count Championship League though, but don't tell anyone.
Okay. Move on.
Yeah, we'll keep that one quiet. So we have got... I think we did the same last year, actually. I think we may have done the same thing last year.
You know, I haven't looked, and we probably should look at stuff like this. We must be coming up on the podcast's anniversary.
It is about the anniversary. It's around about a year, yeah. So we need cakes and things, really. But there you go.
You don't need to get me anything. You know, it's my pleasure to see you every week.
I'm going to get you on those key rings where you can just pop the coin out using a trolley. That'll be my gift to you, Sean.
You know, the ironic things about those things is they probably cost more than £1.
Yeah, I bet they do as well. Yeah.
Ridiculous.
The supermarket shop trolley costs you nothing because you get your pound back. That's what you're missing out on. Anyway, right. So on to listeners' questions. We're going to try and rattle through a load of these and sort of clear the decks for the new season. So Joe Keegan on Instagram. I like this one, actually. It's common for pool players to have multiple cues, break cues, jump cues, etc. Do you think this is something that could boost snooker? Also, any other accessories such as gloves, bags, etc., do you think these things could boost the game?
Thoughts?
I'm not sure they could boost the game.
What do you mean by boost the game?
I don't know. The only boost I know, the chocolate bar. I don't really know what boosts the game. I think there could be things you could sell on, I suppose. They could change things. I know. Hasn't Willow got a crazy rest out there in the market somewhere? It's like a strange double X shape thing.
I did see that.
I saw that somewhere.
Yeah, I did see that. Well, the fact of the matter is that as snooker, in snooker, we are one of the few sports that typically only carries one piece of equipment, i.e., you know, my cue is my cue. I'm looking at it now. It's the same cue I use in practice, in shows, in tournaments around the world. I take it everywhere with me. If there are any professional golfers listening to this podcast and other pro golfers that I know I've spoke to about this subject, they think we as snooker players are completely mental to just have one piece of equipment and expect it to perform the same everywhere we play around the world. And so, Joe, in answer to your question, it's a very, very pertinent question because I know there are several players at the moment looking into having multiple cues in use potentially during one match, because this is where we get in depth. And I don't want to go too deep and lose everybody, but this is where we start talking about what's called cue ball deflection. And that is the degree the cue ball moves offline when struck off center. And the degree to which you can control that deflection has a direct impact on how successful you are. And the cue, obviously, is a massive, massive part of increasing or reducing that deflection. And of course, the cue ball deflects much more or much less in Shanghai versus Sheffield. And so expecting my cue to perform the same around the world is actually a little bit backward. But in snooker, we're guilty of saying, well, this is the way we've always done it. So this is the way it's always going to go. At some stage, a player is going to walk into an arena somewhere in the world with multiple cues. And based on the conditions of that day, based on how they feel that cue ball is moving around that table, they will use cue A, B, or C, and they will be deemed to be a complete lunatic until it works. And when it works, Phil, it'll become the norm. In 20 years' time, it'll be the norm for players to have more than one cue.
Go on then. What are the odds that that player that does that and brings several cues in also has a chalk pouch or a magnetic chalk holder?
Well, I was going to come to that.
It's got to be linked. It's got to be linked.
I was going to come to that because there are special words reserved for people who use chalk pouches and magnets, none of which I can use on this podcast.
Absolutely.
Can't do it. I do like the glove.
Now, is it Ross Muir? Is it Ross Muir that wears a glove?
I completely get the glove because not only does our skin sweat and perspire, but the cue also perspires. And if you're unlucky enough to have oily hands or oily skin, using an ash cue particularly, which sweats quite a lot in humid conditions, can become quite difficult. And so I understand players using gloves. But the pouch and the magna clip they're a complete no-no. And if you've got them, throw them away.
Yeah, I'm surprised the gloves never sort of caught on, really. A lot of players in pool wear gloves, golfers wear gloves. I think it will do. Like you say, it's consistency, isn't it? You're going to get consistency of shot with a glove. But there you go. What does anyone else think? Do you use any of these things? Sean's made his thoughts very clear there about what he thinks is going to happen. So anyway, let's move on, Sean.
StevieX8 on Instagram says, how do you prepare for late night matches?
Oh, personally, I tend to have a curry, a couple of pints, and just sit back and enjoy them.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that was for you, really, Sean.
A typically in-depth answer from yourself, Phil. Yeah, it's an interesting one because I think we're all, as snooker people, we're all used to late nights. I mean, I've been playing late at night since I was 11 years of age, and I played in the Rushden Northants District Snooker League. You know, it was a 7 o'clock start, could be finished at 11 o'clock, and then you'd be in school the next day. Like, you know, so it's kind of inbred into you in our sport. But I think one of the interesting things there aren't that many players do it that I'm aware of, like certainly in terms of the World Championships where you can have those three sessions throughout the day. There's not loads of players who vary up their practice time around that and prepare themselves for being ready at all different stages of the day. The toughest one for me are the home nations events where it's roll off, roll on.
Yeah.
And you know, you might get an indication of a start time, but it's very, very loose. And I find them the most difficult. You've literally just got to suck it up. And I actually think the more you worry about it, I think the worse you make it.
It's bizarre, isn't it? Because you can get one of the first games in the evening, starts at 7, can be done by 7:45, 8:00. But then you can get another one on another table that's not done until like 9:45. You know, or 10:00 even. And so you don't know if you're going at 8:00, 10:00, or even later. And, you know, I've known it where one table's done in 2 hours. Mm. And there's other tables waiting and waiting and waiting and finishing at 1 a.m. It's it is a tricky one. And, it's a bit of a peculiarity of snooker, isn't it, really? Because most other sports, you know when you're going to be on.
Yeah, I think the only thing that comes close to it is the tennis. And we're coming to Wimbledon season. And, of course, at Wimbledon, you know, it is very similar, isn't it? You get the order of play. I think I'm right in saying you know which court you're going to be on, but you don't know when you're going to be on. Unless you're first on,
yep,
you don't know what time you're going to be on. And I think it's something that we could take a leaf out of their book, really, and just go, well, just, you know, you've got to just suck it up and prepare, be as prepared as you possibly can.
Yeah, it does happen in golf as well. It happened the other week in the golf, actually. Some of the tee times were absolutely crazily late, but it's what it is, like you say. Anyway, moving on. Ash Dawson on Twitter, what's your favourite 147 that's been made at the Crucible? And he says his is Hendry's from 2012.
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it's very, very difficult to look past O'Sullivan's, isn't it? Which has been retimed, I believe. I mean, we're all used to saying it was 5:20. But I think that's been readdressed as perhaps the frame time. And I think the break time may have been 5:08, something like that.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, it really is ridiculous.
Absolutely ridiculous. And of course, I think Ronnie's even on record as saying that, you know, he couldn't do that himself now anyway. No. Like, you know, he kind of watches it, you know, through his fingers a bit. But I mean, that was absolutely incredible.
It's bonkers. I mean, it's totally bonkers. So go on then. What's your favourite one?
For me, and Stephen Hendry made one against me in our match there in 2000 and, geez, was it 2007, something like that, 2009? I can't remember what year it was. He made one against me, and he had more plants than an Alan Titchmarsh show through it. I think my favourite 147 is the first.
Oh, Thorburn.
And I think it was Cliff Thorburn's that, you know, if Ronnie's took 5:08, I think Cliff took about 35 minutes to make his.
Yeah.
No, in all seriousness, he didn't take that long. But I think my first one was the first one was my favourite.
Yeah, I was going to say the same. Although I thought the two this year were really special. Actually, I thought Kyron's because it was complete carnage, and I mean, you know, people refer to players having a cue ball on a string. He did not. and he had to rescue himself so many times during that break. But then Selby's was almost the opposite and was complete textbook. They were both special in their own right, I think.
I just jump in about Mark's 147 this year during the final, because I was actually in the studio for it. And I can't remember when it came and the run of play and all the rest of it, but it was so picture perfect.
Yeah.
He was never in any trouble. There was never any drama. Nobody noticed he was on a 147 till he was 8 or 9 reds deep. He got to 64, 72, something like that. And then I think myself, whoever we were in the studio with, was like, geez, he's on a 147 here.
Yeah.
It was incredible. He was on every shot perfectly. And, of course, the way he went with the crowd afterwards was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I was sat in the little bubble studio, and me and him shared a bit of an embrace, like across the distance, like a 20-yard hug. It was wonderful, actually, to be there and to witness it. But, yeah, I think for me, and that very famous line from Jack Carnham, good luck, mate. You know, it's iconic.
Yeah.
Got down to play the black. Cliff's 147. For me, is still the best.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you there. It really was wonderful. Okay. Oh, just talking about the Crucible, just very, very briefly. Chatterbix podcast. I don't know if you've heard of this or not. They World Snooker Tour showed some videos of the guys. They're on Eurosport as well. Joe Wilkinson, David Earle on the Chatterbix podcast. Andy Goldstein sorted them some tickets out to the Crucible this year. Two comedians, very, very funny guys. Their podcast is amazing. Big, big fan. They did a Crucible Diaries. So they've done, I think it's like 4 episodes that chronicle their trip to the Crucible. As snooker fans, if you're snooker fans listening to this, you'll love that. You'll absolutely love it, because these two are completely in awe of everything. It's amazing. They meet Jimmy White. They interview Jimmy White. They meet several other people, and they're just, he's like over the moon that he was having a conversation with Stuart Bingham. It's fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. So if you get a chance, the Chatterbix podcast with Joe Wilkinson and David Earle. I think it's 4 episodes, The Crucible Diaries. Well, well, well worth a listen. Very funny guys, and it's very, very good. Anyway, sorry, Sean.
No worries. Big friends of the podcast, the Mariners in Torquay. In 4 years' time, it'll be the 50th anniversary of the world's being at the Crucible. What can they do to make it extra special?
They can have built the new Crucible by then. It's 4 years' time. It's 4 years' time. You can extend it up into the air. That's what you can do.
Goodness.
Make it even taller. I don't know what they can do, actually. I quite like that some sports do, and they have like the Parade of Champions, which I always think's nice before an event. So you bring out all the previous winners. That's quite nice. Not really sure what you could do to make it. I mean, it is extra special, isn't it? The Crucible's extra special. How do you make extra special extra extra special? What do you think, Sean? Anything?
Were you at the 40th anniversary?
No.
I was very, very lucky to be there, and it was an incredible night, co-broadcast on Eurosport and BBC, hosted jointly by Hazel Irvine and Colin Murray.
Yeah.
And it was an incredible night. And they brought out past champions. Yeah. They were telling great stories. It was an incredible celebration. And everyone who was lucky enough to have a ticket in the Crucible that night or watched it was treated to an incredible night of nostalgia. How they can top that, I don't know, but you know what? I'm pretty sure they're already thinking about it. I'm sure they're already down that road, trying to work out how they can better it, how they can get out, you know, and get out ahead of it. I think that will be a wonderful, wonderful occasion.
Yeah, it will.
And it'll be great.
Yeah, only to be topped off by my 50th the year before. There you go. But yeah, it will. It really will. And I watched that on TV, and it was it was magical. It was a great thing. Talking of special things, you know, the Ronnie O'Sullivan documentary is still to come out. I think that is not far away now. But I think it was due to come out this summer. I mean, it was slated as a Netflix documentary. It's not Netflix. It's an independent production company. So I don't know where it's going to end up. But of course, that was when they followed him the season that he ended up winning the world, and he had a mic on all the way through. yeah, that's due to be out soon. I think that'd be brilliant, you know. So that's due to be out soon. So I think that'd be pretty special. But anyway, moving on. MJK Sports Events on Twitter. It says, ask Sean about Steve Prest and the influence he had on him. Steve was a great lad, sadly missed, and it would be great to hear a few tales about him. Now, I used to work with Steve Prest's brother many years ago, because he's from Harrogate, wasn't he?
Did you?
And his brother worked with me in a car dealership in York. He was a parts manager, I think.
Right.
Lovely guy as well. Really lovely guy. I remember him telling me about his brother. Oh, his brother's this snooker coach or player or whatever. And so go on then. Tell us about Steve Prest.
Well, I was very, very lucky to get to know the Prest family very, very well. And his brother, Andy, who you refer to, is one of the most wonderful, likeable men you could ever wish to meet. Steve Prest, I first met, would have been in the early 2000s, maybe 2001, 2002, something like that. I was doing the rounds on the Challenge Tour. I'd been relegated off the main tour in 98, 99. It took me a couple of years to get back on the main tour, and in the subsequent years, was doing the Challenge Tour, as I say. And the Northern venue was the Manhattan Club in Harrogate, and Steve Prest was the resident pro there. I remember my friend John Wilson, who was taking me around, looking after me, pretty much raised me, to be honest, John. We rocked up in Harrogate for the first time we'd been there, and the event started on the Monday, and we rocked in on the Sunday afternoon, and we rolled into Steve, and he was running a junior club upstairs, and the lad that ran the junior club was called Tom Harris, who went on to become one of the best amateurs in the country and still loves and plays snooker to this day. And the four of us just clicked. We just got on.
Yep.
You know, Steve and I would stay in touch, and there was always a bond between us. We were like brothers. And then you fast forward a little while, I moved from Earthlingborough in North Ants up to Sheffield. I lived there for a few years, was looking for a new coach. Harrogate was only an hour or so up the road. And it just, a partnership was formed between us. And we went on this, you know, roller coaster of emotions for a year, 18 months, which culminated in us lifting the World Championship trophy in 2005. And there's a lot of stories I can't tell on the podcast, but it was incredibly funny. He was an incredible character. He was a little bit of a rogue, you know, he was a lovable rogue, but he was our rogue. And he was a wonderful man. The funniest story that springs to mind when I think of Steve was when we used to go to the qualifiers at Prestatyn. We never stayed at Prestatyn. We never stayed at Pontins. We used to stay in a hotel down the road. And one night we were in, I think we'd come back after a practice session. In fact, that's another story of its own. We were practicing at Pontins, practicing on the other table was Barry Hawkins.
Right.
But I don't know if he'd done something to his hair or something. Steve didn't recognise him. So Steve's come up to me in the quiet, and as he's picking the balls out, he's walked past me and he's gone, I can't believe they've let a holiday maker practice here.
And he thought.
I thought Barry Hawkins was a holiday maker. Anyway.
Oh, brilliant.
We were in the hotel probably that night or the night after, and we were in the bar, and Steve had this thing where he liked to impersonate. He'd like put on a... I'm about to alienate an entire country here. He'd put on a Swedish or a Norse accent of some kind, you know? You know, it was like a half German, half Swedish accent. And we were stood at the bar and he'd go, yes, please, I'd like another pint, please, and all this. Anyway, he's doing this accent, and it was very funny. It was quite... This man has appeared at the bar from nowhere, from the shadows. And he's come up to Steve and he's gone, I cannot help but think that you might be from the same village as I'm from. Steve was an incredible character, and he stayed in character and just pursued it with this fella.
Oh,
he didn't
wow.
know where it was going to go.
That's amazing.
An incredible character. And in more serious terms, one of the best snooker coaches that we've ever known. We sadly lost him just over 10 years ago now, probably 12 years ago. to illness, and very, very sadly missed. I'm still in touch with Andy, as we mentioned, still in touch with his daughter, Emma, and he's very, very much still loved and very sadly missed.
So there you go, MJK Sports Events. That was Sean's little tribute to Steve Press, which I thought was quite lovely, actually. Sean?
Now, I'm not sure if it's Giles Benz or might even be Gillies Benz. I'm not 100% sure. I'm going to go for Giles.
Okay.
What would you go for?
Yeah, I'd concur, yeah.
Would you? Yeah. Giles Benz on Twitter, how much of the Vafai O'Sullivan grudge match was real and how much of it was Hussein trying to rock his boat?
I think it was a lot of Hussein trying to rock his boat. An awful lot of that. I think he was rocking his boat. I think he was doing it slightly tongue-in-cheek as well. I mean, Ronnie, was it in Germany where Ronnie smashed the pack?
It was the German Masters qualifier.
German Masters quali, okay. So he smashed the pack. That clearly riled Hussein. Okay, Hussein, lovely, lovely guy. Really, genuinely lovely guy.
I didn't understand that element of the equation.
What do you mean?
If that's true, and I'm using the word if that is true, that O'Sullivan splitting the pack off the break off in a qualifier match that was before Christmas annoyed Hussein to the point of doing that 4 months later at the Crucible. There's an element of that somewhere that I don't understand.
I think it did. I think it riled him. But I do think Hussein was just, he was trying to get any, playing Ronnie O'Sullivan at the Crucible, I think he's trying to get any advantage he can possibly get. And do you know what? I can't knock him for that, because if I was playing Ronnie O'Sullivan at the Crucible or in my local club, I'd be tripping him up, I'd be kicking him, I'd be doing all sorts of things. So I
can assure you, and anyone listening to this podcast, that there are mind games, there is sledging, there is gamesmanship happening in every frame of every match of every tournament that you've ever watched and will continue to watch.
Yeah.
It's happening in every single game. My take on that situation, I was in the studio analysing the play. I thought the whole thing was staged.
Oh, really?
I thought it was a complete setup.
Wow. How would that come about, though?
I think people have set things up for years. I think you work in boxing week in, week out. How many of these supposed, you know, antagonistic matchups are we supposed to see before we realise that a lot of it's set up for ticket sales and interest? I thought the whole thing was a setup. I thought they both played their parts magnificently. It got everybody talking. It got everybody watching. I thought they both played their parts. I didn't buy the hug at the end and the whole let's be friends and all the rest of it. I thought the whole thing was a setup, and I think their Oscar are probably in the post.
Wow, there you go. What do you think? 147 pod all over social media. Tom Sargent on Twitter, I love this. Do people think if they don't scream, go on, Ronnie, Ronnie indeed wouldn't, go on. It's a bit like when they used to shout in the hole at the golf when Tiger Woods was playing. What, did they think he wouldn't go for it otherwise?
Yeah.
Well, he's not going to go for the hole. Is he not going to aim at that? Is he not? It's just something people do. And you know what? If it makes them happy, shouting that in the crowd, yeah, go for it. I still think, who were, the best shout I've ever heard was the one up in Scotland, Scottish Open, started the final last year. I can't remember who England were playing in the football, but like they shook hands at the start of the final, and then just as it died down, someone shouted, "Go on, Ecuador!" or whoever it was England were playing. But it was in a Scottish accent, and they just waited till it had died down completely and then shouted it. The timing was perfect. And it was, yeah, that was brilliant. Listen, people are going to shout what they're going to shout. As long as it's not when players are down on the short or whatever, I don't have a problem with it. If they want to shout, go on, Ronnie. They've paid their money to be there. They're not on the table throwing orange powder around, then, you know, just enjoy yourselves.
Yeah, no, I would echo that. I think the go on Ronnie chant happens even when he's not playing. You walk out for a final between Kyron Wilson and Ali Carter as the dust settles and the players are settling in for the chat, you know, for the handshakes and all the rest of it with the trophy and the shot before the match starts. Someone will shout, "Go on, Ronnie!"
Yeah, of course will.
You know, it's just the way. And of course, I think what you're saying is right. I think the crowd have paid their money. Everyone wants to go and be entertained. Everyone's out for a good time. And the vast, vast majority of people who turn up to watch snooker events, they're not out to cause any trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, it's a moot point for me. There you go.
Right, we move on to James Whitlock on Twitter. Can you imagine any other sport where the broadcaster relegates it to the third channel, then after an hour pops it online only, where it buffers due to everyone trying to access it, with no commentary at the frame breaks?
Right, one moment while I just get my soapbox out to stand upon. I take issue with this, right? Now, I see a lot of people moaning about, oh, it's on the red button, whatever. Okay. Our main tournaments, I say our as in the sport of snooker, okay? Our main tournaments are shown not just by one broadcaster, but by two. So you actually get a choice of broadcasters, right? How many other sports does that happen on? Yeah? How many other sports? You've got, there's Discovery Stroke Eurosport, there's BBC that show them both. You've also got ITV that show tournaments, okay? And I know it irks the ITV people that they can't show a second game on the red button because they don't have the technology yet, okay? But they'd love to. I really don't think we can complain about snooker coverage. Most sports would give their right arm to get the kind of coverage we get in snooker across many major broadcasters, be it BBC, be it ITV, be it Eurosport, Discovery, Viaplay, online Matchroom Live, whatever it is. I think we're absolutely blessed with the coverage that we get. I really do. And I don't get people knocking it. So when you say, can you imagine any other sport where the broadcaster does this? Can you imagine any other sport that's covered by two channels regularly at the same time? I can't. I think there's only like the FA Cup final that's covered on BBC and ITV. Other than that, I can't think of another one that is. Not in the same way, anyway. And I think the criticism of broadcasters, it does grate a little bit, really. Sean? Sorry, I've gone off on one there. I've ranted. Was it 1 minute 47 seconds, that rant, or was that enough?
The klaxon hasn't gone off yet, Phil. Carry on.
It has now. What do you think? Go
anyway,
on.
If you agree with Phil's rant, get in touch.
Yeah.
I don't know, James. So, James, if you're listening, you know, please don't take this the wrong way. I don't know, James. And I don't know what, you know, age bracket generation James falls into. But from what I see, and from when I take the temperature of, you know, the snooker public, and I meet people at shows and my exhibitions and at tournaments and meets and greets and this, that and the other, there is a distinct line between complaints around this and ideas about, oh, they've gone to the red button, and oh, goodness me, they've had to come off for the news, or geez, if this was Andy Murray playing tennis at Wimbledon, they'd stick with it, and complaints like that, which I've been hearing for a long time, and I do understand. I understand the frustration. But those criticisms, in my opinion, they do tend to come from a generation that's a little bit older, a little bit more used to terrestrial TV, and a little bit less au fait with how streaming works and the like. I think I'm correct in saying, and I mean, you may correct me on this, Phil, and please, anyone else out there, correct me on this when I think you can watch every single ball hit these days in tournaments, can't you?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, you can. You can, yeah. And yes, again, I know to do that, you've got to pay for certain broadcasters.
I know you've got to pay for it, but I think there's a couple of things I would say on that. One, you have to pay for everything.
Yep.
There's a myth going around. We use the term free to air, certainly in the UK and in Ireland where I live. We use the term free to air when referring to what we call terrestrial television. It's absolute rubbish because you have to buy your TV license.
Yeah.
Without spending nearly 200 quid a year, you get nothing.
Yeah.
So nothing's for free. And my second point is, I think, yes, I appreciate you need to have subscriptions and you might need it to Matchroom Live or you might need it to DAZN or you might need it to whatever it might be or Eurosport or Sky or, you know, I get all of that. But I think over the years, I think snooker may well have been so undersold, so sold so cheaply that now this sort of movement into the 21st, 20, you know, I think it's taken a lot of people by storm. And actually it's kind of normal when you look at, when you compare us to other industries. What do you think?
Like I say, I think we're incredibly lucky that we get so much coverage. As I said before, I'm a rugby league fan. I'm a boxing fan. I'm a snooker fan. Rugby league, you get a couple of games a week on telly. Boxing, some of the best boxing shows I've been at or been involved in, either been as a fan or been involved in, haven't even been screened. Haven't even been on TV. Nowadays, a lot of them are streamed via YouTube or Facebook or whatever. But so you can watch them that way a lot of the time. But that's the only way. And when you do, there's often no commentary. There's no production on it. It's literally just a video feed. So I really, sometimes I don't think we sort of appreciate just how lucky we are in snooker. I really don't. And that's my view. I'll probably get pelters for it, but that's my view anyway. So anyway, Katie Roberts on Twitter, has there ever been consecutive 147s in a match? Oh, it's gone very quiet over there in Dublin.
Oh, no is the answer.
Yeah, the answer is no. Certainly not in a televised tour match. There may have been in exhibitions. Don't know, but I wouldn't count that as a match. So anyway, so the answer to that is no. John.
Sure, but sweet, Katie. The answer is no. GCHQ98 from Twitter says, how did... And I think, Phil...
I think it was just after your game with CJ Hui that this was written.
I think this might be a dig.
It could be a dig.
I think.
Yeah. Sorry, should I put a spade emoji on there as well?
Shields up. Right. GCHQ98 on Twitter. How difficult is it to do the punditry and commentary work straight after losing such a significant match? I couldn't imagine Hendry or Davis doing it in their pomp. Now, I think, Phil, this is directed at me.
Well, I would suggest it probably is.
Yeah. Do you know, I must admit, right, I've been blown away over the last couple of years since I've stepped into that broadcasting world and commentating and presenting while still playing. I am consistently blown away by how much aggro it seems to cause amongst a certain core part of the snooker world.
I wonder if anyone's ever considered that maybe Hendry and Davis weren't asked.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's ever asked that. No, I am blown away by it. I have to say, it comes up so often. Mm. The truth of the matter is, I wouldn't do anything that I felt was detrimental to my career. That would be madness. And so when I do the punditry and the commentary, I don't feel as if it's negative, and I don't feel as if it... In fact, if anything, I think it's had a positive impact on my performance, and it's helped me see the game from a completely different point of view. And I'm learning a second skill from some of the best broadcasters on the planet. Coming back to the question, which is specifically about how could you do it after such a significant match... That isn't easy because losing still hurts. I don't roll out, you know, despite wishing him all the best, and I do my post-match and everyone gets a smile and I do all my autographs and any pictures that are asked for. You know, I try to be a good pro.
Do people ask you for pictures, really?
It's mad. It's mad. It It's mad. I'm just behind Shrek.
Did they mistake you for Aunt McPartlin from Ant and Dec? Is that
well,
what it is?
They think I'm Mr. Tumble. Who actually, Mr. Tumble and I have never been seen in the same room.
Well, I know that.
Neither have I and Bruce Wayne by the same extension. But no, I couldn't imagine Hendry or Davis doing it in their pomp either. But the world has changed, and the world of broadcasting has changed. We've all got our own broadcast platforms now. We can all go on Instagram Live. We can all jump on Twitter Spaces. We can all set up a website. The world has changed. When Steve Davis and Stephen Hendry were at their peak, if they wanted to put out something publicly, they had to call a press conference.
Yep.
I can go on Instagram Live now.
Can I just say
this podcast live before anyone gets it as we're recording it now?
Yeah, you could. But can I just say as well? Stephen Hendry's a fine commentator now. Okay, Stephen Hendry's he's a fine commentator now. The Stephen Hendry back when he was playing. Now, I don't think he would have been a very good commentator because he wasn't known as being a happy man. Back then, he certainly wasn't as relaxed as he is now, and I don't think he would have been a great one for commentary while he was still a player.
Here's the other thing which people forget, in terms of like just how contract negotiations work and actually how employment works. I don't have the CV that Stephen Hendry has,
yep,
or a Steve Davis has. So when I'm asked by the BBC, would I like to work? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
I don't have the negotiating power to say, oh, well, actually, no. Can I wait 5 years or 10 years till I give my career up? I don't have the CV that these people who I'm being compared to two of the best players of all time, which I'm taking as a compliment.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't have their CVs.
Yeah.
And Stephen Hendry or Steve Davis may have been able to hold the BBC back and say, no, I'm very happy to work with you when I finish. I'm not Stephen. I haven't been as successful as Stephen Hendry or Steve Davis.
No, very much so. Right, look, we are getting tight on time. We're just coming up on the hour. This is a listener's question special. We've still got loads and loads left, so we're going to have to do another one at another time to get through them all. I will do one more, though, before I go. Panda Pops on Twitter. What would be your punishment for the protesters? Cut off their hands, surely. I'm going route one on that one. I'd ban him from any sporting event ever again. And I don't know. Silly little boy, wasn't he, really? But what would yours be, Sean? Any punishment for the protesters?
Well, it's an interesting one because, you know, anyone who remembers, I mean, I was asked by the governing body and BBC to go front centre the next morning. I was on Radio 5 Live the morning after it happened, debating on the Nicky Campbell show the rights and wrongs of the Just Stop Oil protest with one of the top guys from Just Stop Oil. And, you know, perhaps didn't do enough research or didn't know enough, but I might have, you know, people are entitled to a peaceful protest, aren't they? Thank God we live in a country, we live in a part of the world where you are entitled to protest about things. But actually, I don't see what happened at the Crucible as peaceful.
No, I don't. I think the least...
Such a bad impact on people. Yeah. There were 980 odd other people who'd spent their hard-earned cash who wanted to come to the Crucible and enjoy what was going on. The two players, Joe Perry, Rob Milkins, who were playing at the time.
Yeah.
That wasn't a peaceful protest.
No. The least that should happen should be, for me anyway, that they should have to reimburse all those people for the ticket cost, the travel cost, the hotel cost, their meal before it, whatever their expenses, reasonable expenses were for that got ruined, they should have to pay that.
Do you think that man should be placed in stocks and have snooker balls thrown at him?
Well, the 50th anniversary of the Crucible's first world championship is only 4 years away, and I think the people would turn out in their droves for that. I don't know about snooker balls, but maybe like water balloons filled with orange powder. See how he likes it.
You went to the other end of the spectrum there.
Yeah, I've gone there. Right, anyway, so we will do a load more listener questions at a time. But before we go, I want to give you a little quiz, Sean. We normally do a pointless question, but I want to find out how much you, the David Blaine of snooker, remembers about last season.
Can I just
season.
Stop you there about this David Blaine stuff? I'm not happy about where this
He
is
doesn't
going.
Play piano, does he?
Well,
is that
well
what it
this
is?
Will end up sticking.
Oh,
this,
will it?
It'll end up sticking. And I'm not getting in a box above the Thames for anyone.
Well, it is the 50th anniversary of the Crucible coming up. I'd egg you. If you were in a box above the Crucible, I would so egg you. I'd yeah. be there with a big box of eggs. Anyway, five questions on last
well, so
season.
I've seen you throw, you wouldn't reach.
This is probably true, actually. Five questions on last season. How much do you remember about last season, Sean? Who won the European Masters?
Well, I think he beat me in the quarters. I think it's Kyron Wilson.
It is the best rest player in the world, Kyron Wilson. Who did he beat in the final for a bonus point?
Oh, goodness. Who did he beat in the final? Absolutely no idea. I'm going to guess at Ali Carter.
Not quite. It's the man that you would not recognise in Prestatyn. It's in fact Barry Hawkins that he beats.
The Holiday.
Barry the Holiday Maker Hawkins. That's the one. Okay, so that's 1 point from two. British Open, who won?
Ryan Day.
Who did he beat in the final?
I'm sensing a pattern here amongst these questions.
Yeah, there is, yeah. Kept it pretty
who
root
did he
one.
Beat in the final. I suppose this is the proof of the pudding, isn't it? Nobody remembers who's second.
Wow.
No idea.
Really? You're not even gonna have a stab?
Not even gonna have a stab.
Do you know what, Sean? You've done yourself dirty there. He was by far the best player of that tournament right up until the final. And he's one of your best mates. It's the pistol. Mark Allen. He was fantastic. Do you not remember? He was amazing all week. Like, literally couldn't miss a ball all week, and then Ryan beat him in the final. Do you not remember that, no?
I do now you've said it. But wow. It goes to show, doesn't it? We only remember people winning.
Absolutely. So we've got two more to go then. So, who won the Scottish Open?
We've only had two questions. I thought it was a five-question quiz.
Yeah, there's three more, obviously.
All right, thank you.
You misheard me.
Who won the Scottish Open? Gary Wilson.
It was Gary Wilson.
Yes.
Indeed it was. And he did an amazing Scottish accent when I was interviewing him afterwards, because his mum is in fact Scottish.
Joe O'Connor.
Oh, he's pulled that one out of the bag. What a result that was. It was Joe O'Connor, the boxing sensation, Joe O'Connor. Okay, so you've got both of them right there for the Scottish.
I'll tell you what, I watched that interview with him on the WST YouTube channel. It was like watching Rocky IV.
He's a good lad, is Joe. Do you know what? He's a really good lad. He's a nice
really
lad.
Nice lad.
Really talented kid, very focused. I hope he kicks on from that Scottish Open fan, does very well. Okay, English Open. In the colds of Brentwood.
Well, he should never have been there.
Oh, I thought you'd remember this one.
He should never have been in the final. It was Mark Selby.
It certainly was Mark Selby. And who did he beat in that final?
Mark Allen?
Can't believe you didn't remember this one. It was, of course, a reversal of the World Championship. The World Championship final was a reversal of the English Open final. He beat Luca Brasel in the final. Last but not least...
Can I just say then, just before we move on, like, when we start looking back at last season, the clues were there, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
About Luca.
Yeah,
you know,
because
it was very easy for us to, like, you know, as we've dealt with earlier on with the questions, like, you know, I've moved into this punditry role in the broadcasting, we're chatting about players and this, that and the other, and you're watching Luca come through the World Championships playing this freeloading, freewheeling snooker, never won a match at the Crucible, plays, but the clues were there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't completely out of the blue.
No, he played very, very well. So it was, Selby beat Luca Brissell. So the final one then, I think so far you've got one all correct and the other three you've missed the runner-up. So we are going to go right back to the start of the season, last season, the tournament that's just started now, Championship League.
Well, I know who won it.
Go on, who won it?
And that was Luca Brissell.
Right, you've got the winner then. Which I'll give you a round of applause for.
Thank you.
But who did he beat?
I'd like to thank my mum.
Would you like a clue to the beaten finalist? Do you want a clue?
Who did he beat in the final?
Would you like a clue?
No, I think I know.
Oh.
I think he beat the second best rest player on the planet.
You were in the final.
Kyron Wilson.
No, he didn't. He beat a player that's no longer on the tour. He beat Lu Ning in the final. So there you go. He beat Lu Ning in the final. So
before we move, when you say no longer on the tour, is Lu Ning? Is he no longer off the tour by natural causes, or?
Well, I think we covered that in the last podcast, didn't we?
Oh right, okay.
He got 5 years, 4 months. Ban. So he's not on the tour currently. Whether he comes back or not will remain to be seen. So there you go then. So let's top these up. So out of a possible 10...
Natural causes.
He's not dead. Just only to the tour. From a possible 10, you scored quite a decent 6, I would suggest. But I think you've proved that people remember winners.
Well, I mean... I only do. I mean, that was poor, wasn't it? Without my stat sheet that Dave Hendon produces for everybody behind the scenes at tournaments, I'm useless, aren't I? We only remember people who win.
And did you notice, by the way, I didn't put the Welsh Open in there because I'm kind. Did you see that? And because you probably know the runner-up in that one as well.
Yeah. It's potentially too early for this level of abuse, Phil, in the season.
Well,
Just remember this, Philip. It's a long, long season.
Yeah. Start as you mean to go on, I've always been told.
And you haven't been booked yet by WSC for anything yet.
Actually, that's a very, very good point. I need to behave myself until I get that email, don't I? If I do indeed get that email. Right, we'll be back in a fortnight's time. Let's do some podcast planning live on the podcast, Sean. Should we do another one heavy on listener questions, or shall we do our season preview next?
I'm happy to do either. I mean, we are inundated with questions, aren't we? We've got so many questions. We're drowning in listener interaction and questions from people.
We've got a load, including the big one, all about sandwiches. So there's all kinds of things to look forward to there. So there we are. We will be back in a fortnight's time. It may be a season preview. It may be listener questions. It may have a rant, even. And I might even get Sean some more questions about last season, since he did pretty rubbish in those ones. Sean, great to chat to you as always.
Hang on a minute. You just said I did quite well with 6.
I was being kind, to be honest. You'd mentioned about me not getting booked yet for the new season, so that'd be nice for a little while, but that's all changed. Lovely to chat to you, Sean.
I wish I could say the same.
I bet you could. Anyway, see you back in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening. That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's all words at 147pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.